Should the 49ers pay Brock Purdy? I guess that every single national talking head has decided that they need to chime in on this, most of them without any real insight or in-depth analysis, just with surface-level takes. But I think that people are forgetting the main aspect of football when they talk about this. Football is a team sport, and the only reason that this is a question right now in national and local circles is because the 49ers are 5-7. But we can disassociate team play from quarterback play. Yes, good QB play is the most important variable, but winning is not absolutely tied to good quarterback play. If you want a more famous or a higher drafted example of this than Brock Purdy, you can go to Joe Burrow, who's playing as efficiently as he did in 2021 when the Bengals went to the Super Bowl. And the Bengals this season are 4-8. Brock Purdy is still in the top five of the adjusted EPA per play leaderboard. So what this is going to do, and Ben Baldwin does an excellent job with this, is that it takes a quarterback's efficiency and it adjusts for pass protection, receiver drops, dropped interceptions, fumble recoveries, and interception returns. And it also adjusts for yak to a certain extent while taking a look at the strength of defenses that every quarterback has faced. So the goal here is to isolate the variable of the quarterback and to figure out how much the quarterback himself is contributing to a team. That's also the goal of QBR. Well, in this statistic, Brock Purdy still ranks as the number five QB in all football. Last year, he was number one. Look who's number one this season, Joe Burrow. He's on a 4-8 football team. Nobody is doubting the Bengals' decision to pay Joe Burrow. So let's let go of the draftism here. There's draftism when it comes to Brock Purdy because he's number five here and he's number seven in QBR. This is still a top 5-7 performer in the NFL. Kyle Shanahan said it himself a couple weeks ago that he doesn't think Brock Purdy's level of play has changed at all. The team has changed around him. The team has obviously gotten worse. I'll add this to the mix. This is a reflection of Shanahan himself. First, we'll go to last season. Now, this is not going to be completely apples to apples because this from last season includes motion, but it is essentially an XY-axis of easy button percentage on the Y-axis, and easy buttons include RPOs that a coach calls, play action plays that a coach calls, motion plays that a coach calls, and screen passes. So a lot of layups, especially when you look at screen passes. They've taken motion out of the 2024 version of the graph, but when we look at the 2023 version, look who's on the upper right where you want to be. Mike McDaniel, Andy Reid, and Kyle Shanahan. So essentially, Kyle Shanahan was calling plays that were layups for his offense and his quarterback in particular at one of the highest rates in football. And the X-axis, which measured how effective those plays were at creating separation, giving room to roam, he was the most effective play caller in the whole league, according to this metric from Patton Analytics. So you want to be further to the right, and you want to be further up in the graph. You want to be where McDaniel, Shanahan, Reed, Sean McVay were. Well, now look at this year's version of the graph and see where Kyle Shanahan's logo went. It's not in the upper right anymore. In fact, there are fewer coaches in the extreme upper right. This year, motion is not included in this graph from Patton Analytics. I hope to get an apples-to-apples graph for you at some point soon. But Kyle Shanahan has used the easy button, which means RPOs, play actions, and screen passes, less than any other coach in the league, less than any other play caller in the league. His effectiveness score is also below average. You want to take a look year to year? These are 2023 play caller ratings. Kyle Shanahan is number four. 2024, Kyle Shanahan is number 20. So the gist of it is that Brock Purdy's job has gotten way more difficult this year. And it's not just Kyle Shanahan losing his fastball. There are a multitude of other reasons behind even that, behind even what we're seeing from Kyle Shanahan. Oh, I'm going to delve into a lot of my theories over the course of the next several minutes, but the data shows us something very clear. And it's that Brock Purdy is having to fit the ball into tighter windows, that Brock Purdy is not getting the benefit of what we call layup passes at nearly the same rate as last year. One of my favorite stats is that Brock Purdy in 2023 threw the sixth most screen passes in football. And in 2024, he was down at number 32 up until this past weekend when he threw seven, because I'm guessing the snow game encouraged Kyle Shanahan to call more, but he still ranks number 25 in screen passes. Guess who is the number one quarterback when it comes to screen pass attempts in the NFL? Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid has made sure to roll out the red carpet for Patrick Mahomes, and he's made sure to throw a ton of screen passes. The 49ers, for reasons that we can discuss, for theories that we're going to talk about over the next several minutes, have not done that for Brock Purdy. So his job this season has been exponentially more difficult. I could also take a look at average separation at the time of completion or attempt. Last year was number 11 for the 49ers. This year it's down at the very bottom of the league, number 31 or number 32. Every single piece of data combined with the yak data, where the 49ers have gone literally from number one over the past several seasons to number 31 or 32, depending on the metric that you use this year, they've gone from the best in the league to the worst in the league. Everything indicates that what Brock Purdy has stylistically been asked to do is extremely different from 2023 to 2024. Now, before we get into the reasons of why, we have to emphasize the big picture. And the big picture is that even though Brock Purdy has stylistically been asked to do different things this year, with less yak at his disposal, with less window, like separation window at his disposal, he still ranks number 7 in QBR and number 5 in an adjusted EPA per play on this leaderboard from Ben Baldwin. So 5-7. I do not care about people's feelings. People are going to say a whole bunch of stuff because football fans get emotional. Football fans put too much blame on the QB when things go poorly, and they give the QB too much credit when things go well. I'm going to follow the tape, and I'm going to follow the data. And the data is really important to follow because even watching tape comes with biases. You're going to look for what you like, and you're going to disregard what you don't like on tape. That's why you have to go to the numbers to see what quarterbacks are doing on the aggregate over the large sample. And for Brock Purdy, that sample is at 417 dropbacks already. The adjusted EPA per play is equal to Josh Allen's. Allen obviously had a big advantage on Sunday in the snow. Allen is 6'5", 240-plus pounds. His hand size is around 84th percentile amongst all quarterbacks to have been logged in that metric, and Brock Purdy is at like the 25th percentile. So, of course, you're going to do better in the snow if you're somebody like Josh Allen, which is why Buffalo drafted him. But we also will not be prisoners of the moment. We're also going to look at the larger sample, and if you wanted to look at adjusted EPA per play or QBR ever since Brock Purdy entered the league in 2022, he's number one in the entire league. So this whole idea that his play has somehow regressed beyond repair just isn't true. Look at all that's happened around Brock Purdy. The 49ers team is crumbling around Brock Purdy. No Christian McCaffrey. Brandon Ayuk didn't show up to training camp, or he did show up, but he didn't show up to practice at training camp, but at least wasn't able to participate because of the hold in. Technically the hold in, right? It wasn't a hold out. The season started with Brandon Ayuk not close to top form, and then he got hurt, tore his ACL. So the 49ers didn't have their top receiver from last year. They didn't have McCaffrey for the first, half of the season. Now they don't have him anymore for another 6 weeks, and they may be done playing football by the time that Christian McCaffrey is healed up and ready to go again. They've had a boatload of other injuries on top of that. And the cherry on top of the entire Sunday is that the 49ers are playing legitimately bad defense this year. All of those things have something to do with how the team performs outside of Brock Purdy's control. So this whole idea that, oh my God, the 49ers are 5-7 when at this time last year, their record was a whole lot better. Brock Purdy must have gotten a whole lot worse. That just completely ignores the reality of the situation. And it's a team sport. It's always been a team sport. A quarterback is only going to be as good as a play caller allows him to. And a play caller is only going to be as good as a quarterback allows him to. And then you have to add in all the other variables. The reason that we love watching football is because it is organized chaos, right? There's chaos. There's violence out on the football field. There are big, strong athletes, very skilled athletes. And then you've got to corral all that and turn it into the most efficient operation possible. So it is absolutely foolish to try to look at one variable, the quarterback position, and assign it all the credit and all the blame for success and failure, respectively. Again, it's really easy to see how foolish this is when you look at a list like this. Joe Burrow has been excellent this year. The 7.5 adjusted net yards per attempt for Joe Burrow matches his 2021 season, where the Bengals were AFC champions and they went to the Super Bowl. Yet they're 4-8 this year. Brock Purdy, I think you could make the case that Brock Purdy has actually been better this year than last. And it's not, obviously, he's not ranked higher, because these rankings, you do your best to isolate quarterback play, but you can't fully do it. But some, if we're just going to focus on the tape, and I'm not sure if this is the case, but you can make the case. The scrambling has been more prolific for Brock Purdy. The deep passes have, I think, been more impressive for Purdy, although he had a very high percentage of completed deep passes last year. But also last year, he had that easy button on more often from Kyle Shanahan. The fact that Purdy has had to play without Christian McCaffrey and with lower separation across the board for the 49ers this year has made it tougher for him as well. At the very least, if you're just looking without statistics at an evaluation of a quarterback, Purdy in 2022 and 2023 essentially had his full stable of weapons available for most of the time, right? There's always going to be injuries in football. Today, Talanoa Hufanga had a great line. He said, in this sport, the injury rate is 100%, and that's true. You're going to get hurt at some point. No team's going to go through the season completely unscathed. But the 49ers in 2022 and 2023 were relatively unscathed, especially compared to what they're seeing this year. And keep in mind that Purdy also ran the league last year, even with the pass protection for the 49ers ranking in the 20s. So it wasn't perfectly set up for him in 2022 and 2023. It definitely isn't perfectly set up for him now, yet he still is ranking in that top 5-7 in any isolated metric that we look at. And I think that a lot of people who are really casual about this look at the 5-7 rank record, and they'll think, oh, Purdy has regressed to the 20s. The 49ers, you know, they better not touch a contract for Brock Purdy. And I hate to break it to you, those opinions are not going to matter in this situation. What's going to matter is the actual data. What's going to matter is the value of the quarterback position. And what's going to matter is Brock Purdy's play, which is measured by the data within the context of the value of the quarterback position. One thing that I do have to say about these charts right here, when we look at the easy button usage with the 49ers throwing the fewest screens in the league this year, with everything being much more difficult for Brock Purdy, is that essentially, and this is, it's not just Shanahan. Shanahan's at the very bottom here, and I don't think he's having a great year calling plays for the 49ers, and I think he's been dealt a very difficult deck just based on a difficult hand based on what the 49ers have had to fight through this year, both on the field and obviously all the off-field tragedy. It hasn't been easy for Kyle Shanahan, but it's not just Kyle Shanahan who has worsened in the play caller score this year. Essentially, the entire Shanahan coaching tree has scored worse this season. I'm going back to 2023s. You could see Shanahan at the top right, Mike McDaniel top right, Sean McVay top right, Matt LaFleur, keep his name in mind. He's in the top right here. Where is Bobby Slowick? Here's Bobby Slowick. Slowick was a little bit below average last year, but he was calling more easy button plays. And then look where Andy Reid was last year. He was with Kyle Shanahan over in the top right. Look at all the regressions that we've seen this year. Shanahan obviously way down here. Andy Reid is no longer the extreme outlier that he was last season, although he's kept it up to a good degree. Ben Johnson doing a hell of a job in Detroit. But other Shanahan disciples like Mike McDaniel, who, again, back to 2023, way up in this corner. Mike McDaniel's over here. Sean McVay, he's over here. Sean McVay was way over on the right. The only guy that remains in the top right after being in the top right last year is Matt LaFleur. And I would offer that Matt LaFleur and the Packers were really bad relative to where they finished last year over the first half of the season. So over the second half of the season, LaFleur and the Packers and Jordan Love found their stride. I think that their score was actually, if we go back to 2023, I think that LaFleur would have been closer to Shanahan and Reid based on how he was starting to really, really find his vibe with Jordan Love down the stretch. That's what made it a great playoff game between the 49ers and the Packers. So if you consider that, and then you look at LaFleur this year, he might be in about the same spot as last season, or even a little bit worse. So this is a league of adjustments. And as soon as Shanahan and McVay, especially with their style of offense, have been running the league for the past several years. Andy Reid, obviously good too, but it's a different system. But out of the tree, Shanahan and McVay have had so much success over about half a decade that it isn't surprising that defensive tendencies around the league have been geared toward stopping it. So before everybody wants to pile on Kyle Shanahan, be like, oh, okay, well, what's he doing here at the bottom? Well, all of his disciples seem to have lesser scores this year when it comes to, and they're also throwing fewer easy passes because defenses are probably gearing up against some of the screens. The one time that Kyle Shanahan has spoken about throwing fewer screens this year, he has said that defenses are waiting for them. And it's a constant chess match. The league is always going to be trying to move to stop what's working. And the 49ers, with all the success that they saw in prior years, have run into defenses now that seem to be a step ahead or two steps ahead of where they were in the past. So when you're in the midst of battle, and that is over the course of the season, the 49ers are not far removed from being the number one offense in all of football. That was just last season. It was less than a calendar year ago. It's tough to do the type of self-scouts and self-evals that can right the ship, especially if the defenses have had a full offseason to devise ways to get ahead. So moving forward, even if the 49ers are done this season, and they're not done yet, so we're going to watch in December to see what happens, but even if this season ends without a playoff berth, what they do moving forward here over the next few games is going to be fascinating to me because it's going to set the table for an offseason of further self-evaluation. You would hope that some of it's already happening right now, given what's happened over the past couple of weeks. Further self-evaluation to take the next counter move in the chess match against opposing defenses. But where the 49ers can rest easy, what should make them extra confident is that despite the fact that none of these play calling metrics are scoring well for them, their quarterback still is. Their quarterback has maintained that top 10 status and efficiency. And that is the hardest variable to attain in this league. So the 49ers can play hardball. They have every right to play hardball in these negotiations. And we still have five games to go too. So the negotiations can't even start until five games from now. But the way this is going, with what Purdy has put on tape, with what the data shows us, with what the entire accumulation of 2022, 2023, and 2024 shows us, this ends in only one place. This ends with Brock Purdy earning what quarterbacks are commanding on the market. Now, what that means has some broadness to it. Does he want to set the market APY, average per year? Does he care more about fully guaranteed money? Some people say that the APY is a vanity number. So yeah, it may not be $62 million a year. It might be $52 million a year, but where will the fully guaranteed money be? Is it going to be higher than Trevor Lawrence's? Is it going to be, there's so many different variables with which to look at the contract. And then you could talk about where there's going to be an out. Can the 49ers build an out in after year two or year three with Jimmy Garoppolo? They built one in after year two. So that ended up being a really team-friendly deal for the 49ers. I mean, we could talk all of those technicalities and logistics, but Brock Purdy will be handsomely rewarded, and the 49ers have budgeted for it, and the 49ers would be foolish to not follow through with what's been their plan, because not much has changed about Brock Purdy's play this year. You don't just abandon something they were sailing toward, setting course toward. Jed York at the owners' meetings was saying, yeah, the market's the market. We're planning to pay Brock Purdy. You don't just change that because the guys around Brock Purdy and the team around Brock Purdy has had a down season. You have to be able to look at this intelligently and separate things and realize that winning is not absolutely tied to good QB play. It certainly is correlated, but you have outlier situations. And this, based on what we know about the 49ers this season, when we look at the drop in yak and when we just look at the whole body of work from San Francisco, the separation, the play calling grades, we can definitely see that this is one such situation. We could also see that Joe Burrow is in a situation that doesn't seem to be all too different than the 49ers, in that his team is losing a whole lot of games, but he is still on top of those quarterback rankings. And nobody's going to question the Cincinnati Bengals' commitment to Joe Burrow. By the way, today, and here's one more point that I'll add. So far, we have seen a demonstrated ceiling for Brock Purdy, and it's the number one quarterback efficiency-wise in the league. We saw it last year. The demonstrated floor has been number seven. This is QBR on the bottom. QBR is ESPN's proprietary ranking system. They're going to take into account scrambling. Again, they're trying to isolate quarterback play from everything else. So Purdy has scored as high as number one, and he has scored as low as number seven. That's been the range. 1 to 7. The highest paid quarterback in football right now is Dak Prescott by average per year. He has scored much lower than 7 at times in his career. He's never scored number one, by the way. So, I mean, at some point, you just have to resort to logic. You have to resort to reason, and you have to resort to facts and not feelings. And you know, we can go through this whole season with Brock Purdy. The whole idea that somehow he's strung together several bad games is just a complete work of fiction. In fact, there have been plus games where you could argue that the 49ers would be way worse than 5-7 without him. He might be the one cobbling things together for this football team, given how injured they've been around him on the offensive side of the ball. I would say that Nick Bosa is carrying similar value on the defensive side of the ball for the 49ers, based on how the past couple games without Bosa have gone. So every piece of information leads in only one direction. Pieces of speculation and conjecture and people just talking however they want to talk online may lead in other directions, but that isn't relevant. Like, those are opinions that just do not match what any of the data says. Everybody make sure that you check out the San Francisco Standard. Today, I wrote about the running back position, 49ers youth movement at the running back position. With Christian McCaffrey and Jordan Mason out, the 49ers are turning the run game over to youth. Isaac Garendo, who started one game at running back during his college career, is going to be the starter for the 49ers now. It's going to be interesting to see how that works for the 49ers. And then I talked about Israel Abanikanda, the second year man from the New York Jets. 49ers claimed him off waivers, who still has two more years beyond this one under contract. Somebody that Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, and I know a lot of people who cover the 49ers, really like coming out of the 2023 draft in Pitt. He is now the youngest player on the 49ers team. I don't know if he's immediately going to be the number two. I know Patrick Taylor Jr. got called up from the practice squad. He's on the 53-man roster. But we're going to get to see that youth movement at running back. And I really appreciate that the 49ers have done it this way, because it shows us that there is a future-facing outlook right now for the 49ers, which there needs to be, given the state of the team, the playoff chances. Things have not broken their way this season. They have to do that self-scouting, self-evaluation to get the fastball back, not only for Kyle Shanahan, but as a team next year. So instead of signing somebody like Matt Breida or a veteran who's been around, you know, the block a few times, the 49ers decided to go 22-year-old, youngest player on the roster. Will there be some growing pains? Probably, because, you know, Israel Abanikanda only has 29 NFL touches. So there may be some screw-ups if he's thrown into the action here in December earlier on. But he also has two more years beyond this one of team control. He is only going to be making about $1 million per year in base salary after this season. So it fits within the 49ers cap. It's essentially a free draft pick for the 49ers. He was behind Breland Hall and Breland Allen and Breece Hall in New York. So it was hard to crack that lineup, hard to see what exactly Israel Abanikanda had. I know he had a couple nice runs in the preseason, including a touchdown run against the New York Giants. But the 49ers now have a much more open room with Isaac Grendel, the guy that's pictured up on the screen, only having that one start since the start of his college career. I mentioned this yesterday, and you could see it here a little bit larger. This is the relative athletic score for Israel Abanikanda. He is very fast in a straight line, decent size at 216 pounds. The explosion stats are awesome, so he could be a good one-cut guy in the outside zone. That's what the 49ers are betting on. The agility, not as good here in the bottom right, so he's not going to be a superstar from a movement perspective like Christian McCaffrey, but I do think that there is some ability here. And the 49ers, they get to play a Bears defense this weekend that ranks number 22 in run defense, but number 5 in pass defense. This is by EPA per play. So when you look at Chicago, this is, I think this is an ideal test for the 49ers as they try to dig themselves out of the malaise, right, that we've seen, and really come to grips with the fact that a lot of guys are hurt. This might not be their year, but they're still going to compete till the very end, as they should. That this is a competitive league. They still want to see exactly where this offense is. Just for Kyle Shanahan's sake, as much as anybody else's, you need to start winning that chess match against the rest of the league. You need to build some momentum for 2025. Remember that it was the 5-game stretch to close 2017 when the 49ers started 1-10 and finished 6-10 with Jimmy Garoppolo. That gave the 49ers a lot of energy moving forward. 2018 was a wash because Garoppolo tore his ACL, but by 2019, the same group, it was the same team, not the same group. They made more additions, but the team that went 1-10 in 2017 was 13-3 and Super Bowl bound in 2019. So what you do over the final 5 games absolutely can carry over in many important ways to the future. And with a team like the Bears coming in, and a defense that has been misbalanced, that hasn't played the run as well against the 49ers offense, that ran the ball much better against Buffalo, but unfortunately saw the injury to Christian McCaffrey. And then with a pass defense that's done some good things for the Bears, I think that this is an excellent, excellent showcase opportunity for San Francisco. Some of these young guys, see how Purdy can work with rotating pieces coming into the lineup. It's going to be 64 degrees in Santa Clara. There is not precipitation in the forecast. All of this stuff is important for evaluation purposes. And, you know, I always, throughout the entire year, I focus on team building. That's my forte, right? I really, really love talking about team building, the salary cap, strategy, value at different positions, where the 49ers have lost value, where they've gained value. And it's a really good chance over the course of the next month to talk about team building right now, to really go, you know, parallel paths with our discussions of the 49ers. They're technically still alive for a playoff spot, but to even sniff that, they're going to have to probably win all their games. And to win all their games, they got to win one at a time. And to win one at a time, they got to reverse getting blown out over the past couple weeks. And to do that, well, they have to fix a lot of things from a strategic perspective that starts with Shanahan, starts with, you know, what they're serving up offensively, continues on a Nick Sorensen. What can he generate out of a defense that has looked lost without Nick Bosa? I mean, there's so much as far as potential growth and setting the table for 2025 to talk about over the next few weeks that, quite frankly, I'm excited. And I think the biggest storyline is going to be Brock Purdy, because he's going to be eligible for that new deal as soon as the regular season ends. And so far, I again have to say, zoom out, zoom out, zoom out. Brock Purdy has been impressive. Do not be a prisoner of the moment. Look at this from the rational perspective. And Purdy, despite having a much more difficult job than he did last year, is still fighting his ass off. And he's still in this metric right here. He's still in the top five. I mean, we've been talking all year about the throws that he's been dropping in a bucket. We've also been talking about the ones that he has dropped in a bucket, but have been dropped. And I'll go through a full film analysis when this is all said and done and maybe reach a conclusion as to which version of Brock Purdy was better, 2023 or 2024. But I think it's going to be a lot closer than casual people think. People will look at the record and think 2023 Brock Purdy was way better. I'm not so sure. With what we've seen mobility-wise from him this year, what we've seen on some of those deep throws from him this year, with what he's had to deal with around, surrounding him, that this version of Brock Purdy might be improved over last year. And that's also for the 49ers to decide. And yes, that becomes part of negotiations. If you think your quarterback is on an upward trajectory and you think he is going to represent the team well as that centerpiece, you're not afraid to pay up. I personally think that Kyle Shanahan already made up his mind on Brock Purdy a couple of years ago, and whatever you've seen moving forward has only reinforced it. But that's what the fun of this offseason is going to be. We're going to get to sit back and watch exactly how it's going to go down. Anyway, check out the San Francisco Standard. We took a look at, Isaac Guerrero today at practice. This is him reading off a play sheet as he's getting ready to start for the first time. Thought that was a cool moment. Guerrero reading off the play sheet. Talanoa Hufanga. He's got a club now on his hand, as you'll see here. Make these a little bit bigger over on the screen. Let's do this. So Hufanga operating with the club on his right hand. It's kind of blending into the wall there. Now you can see it. That is a torn ligament that he had repaired in his wrist. So Hufanga has opted, along with the medical staff, to go with that club. As you can see in some of this footage, he actually is catching the ball as it's coming toward him. He said he had a friend in college who had a club on his hand who had three interceptions in one game. So some of it is a mind over matter thing, although I think that physically it is more difficult when you are dealing with a club instead of your bare hand trying to catch the ball. And then we've got some Christian McCaffrey news. Let's get this up on the screen. McCaffrey posted this to Instagram. Football is the greatest game on the planet to me. I love that you can find out exactly who you are without ever saying a word. It lifts you up and breaks you down, and it can happen fast. It's humbling in the best ways. You can do everything right and still fail. That's life, and that's football. It's a constant test of wills, and those who just keep going tend to reap the benefits of their perseverance. This wasn't my year, and sometimes when it rains, it pours. You can feel sorry for yourself and listen to the birds, or you can hold the line. I'm grateful for the support of everyone in my corner and promise I'll work smarter and harder than ever to come back better from this. I love my teammates. I love the 49ers, and I love football. God doesn't miss. Onward, with the praying hands emoji. All I see here is you can hold the line. Is Gladiator 2 any good? I'm going to go see it on Friday. But, you know, hold the line, stay with me. So I see hold the line with Christian McCaffrey, and I think about holding the line with Maximus. Back in the 2000 version of Gladiator, 99, 2000, it's been 24, 25 years since that movie came out. So Gladiator 2 is out now. I'll let you guys know how it is after I go watch it. But that was the Christian McCaffrey post. To me, it seems like He's done for the season based on this. I'm not going to speculate. I'll ask Christian to see what the plan is. But the only information I have at the moment is his post, and it's making it sound like it's going to be next season. Although he's saying year and not season, and the calendar year is over in less than a month. They say 6 weeks for the PCL. 49ers can't worry about that. They need to take this 1 week at a time. Improve 1 week at a time. And then we're going to get our answer on so many of these fronts when the time does come. So, are we going to go to a 49ers Q&A? I think we could go to a 49ers Q&A. This show, by the way, is brought to you by Public Rec. Public Rec, they sent me this pair of pants that I was extremely, extremely impressed with. They're called the Game Changers. And the thing about Public Rec is that the pants, like, they look nice, but they feel really comfortable. It's like this whole two-in-one thing. And one of these days, I'll show you the pants on the show, but they were really, really good. So anyway, you can stay comfortable this holiday season without compromising style, because with Public Rec's Game Changer pants, you can really have it all. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off their entire order with the code Lombardi at publicrec.com. There you have it on the bottom of the screen. Lombardi at publicrec.com. That's 20% off with the code Lombardi at publicrec.com. Again, I have these pants. I think I got them in green, kind of a darker green, cool color. And I recommend them. Stop suffering in regular pants and give the gift of comfort this holiday season. For a limited time only, our listeners get 20% off when you use the code Lombardi at checkout. That's 20% off with the code Lombardi at publicrec.com. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Give yourself or someone you love the gift of comfort this holiday. There it is, Lombardi at publicrec.com. Moving on to the 49ers Q&A. Let's go. Let's get it. Wow, 647 comments. This is a good question. In the chart, there was one that was missing motion. Could that be because of the pre-snap motion rule change? The rule actually didn't change. This was something that Pro Football Talk, I think, misreported or sensationalized in their headline. Cheat motion has always been illegal. Like, you can't run forward until after the snap. The NFL doubled down and said, hey, you can't be moving forward at the time of the snap, but that was illegal before. So what the cheat motion, that's what Kyle Shanahan, I think he named it. He calls it cheat motion. It means that guys are running laterally. They're running sideways before the snap, and then they run forward right at the time of the snap. The NFL never changed the rule on that. There was a lot of confusion this offseason. So no, I don't think that this has anything to do with it. There just wasn't, you know, one of the charts that I put up there charted motion, and one didn't. I'm going to put it up on the screen. So this was last year's, and one of the easy button plays that it included was motion. And then this is this year's, and you can see one of the easy button plays is not motion. I just think that the methodology from Patton Analytics, who makes these cool charts, go check them out, got better. And they realized, hey, everybody's running motion. It's not really an advantage. There wasn't even much of a correlation anymore last season between motion and offensive efficiency. There was a few years ago, but as I said, defenses catch up to offenses, and then offenses have to make their counter moves. And I think that when you look at the Shanahan guys being worse on this year's chart, even if it's a different set of variables slightly without the motion than last year, I think it's a good case of the Shanahan offense needing to make a counter move, because he and all of his disciples, essentially, and LaFleur's debatable, but he and all of his disciples are in worse spots on this chart. And that means it's harder for their quarterbacks. And it's the quarterback coach or quarterback play caller tandem that is the engine of how successful an offense will be. Dave asks, if Greenlaw doesn't play a snap, does this year count as an accrued season? Does his contract extend or not? I think a contract only tolls if it's a rookie deal. So as a veteran free agent after this year. Dre Greenlaw would stay a veteran free agent. Now, Elijah Mitchell, his contract should toll for next season. Mitchell was a sixth-round draft pick in 2021, so he was on a rookie deal. And because he did not play all season, he will still be on a rookie deal. We saw that happen with Tarvarius Moore, 49ers safety. They were able to get him back for one more season after a season-ending injury for him in, I believe, 2021. Do I think that running Debo was too predictable and the 49ers lost all that punch? Well, I want to go deeper into some of the numbers to see exactly where Shanahan has lost his play calling efficiency. I suspect that the first down runs and what they're trying to deliver in the scripted portion of games. So the game planning down is first down, right? So on first down, you are more likely to see what you have studied on tape, and you're more likely to run what you've run all week. It's going to be the more choreographed down. It isn't until third down, usually, that the defense is going to start throwing surprises at you. But if you do worse on first down as a football team, what's going to happen is you're going to set up harder second and third downs. I suspect, and I haven't done the full data analysis, and I probably should start doing that about right now, and I probably can do it in real time as we talk, but I suspect that the 49ers have been worse on first down this season, and that's included a lot of their running plays because they have a high first down run rate, and that's made them worse on second and third down. I know for a fact this has been an issue in the red zone where they've struggled because their first down run rate has been really high in the red zone, and the runs haven't gone anywhere. So, as I go to 49ers offensive stats, we're going to find this out in real time. We're going to see if my theory is correct. But I'm looking at the 49ers first down efficiency on offense in 2023. Last year, okay, so here we go. And I can even put this up on the screen. This is going to be a very, very, I think, insightful way to look at things. Last year, the 49ers on first down were the most efficient offense in the league by far. First down, the 49ers drop back EPA per play was in the top four, and their rushing EPA per play, which included Debo Samuel, was second to none. They're way up here in the top right. You can see it down here. They're ranked number one. So let's see where the 49ers have gone now into 2024. From the best first down team in the league, too. I'm updating it. Give this a second. Oh, no. I don't even see the 49ers. There they are, number 12. So I was right. The 49ers have gone from the most efficient first down team in the league to the 12th most efficient first down team in the league. That is the game planning down, first down. That is where you catch opponents, you know, that's where you win throughout the week when the coaches are sitting there scheming up plays. And then you set yourself up for better second and third downs. The third down is more of the quarterback's down, right? Because that's more going to be more improvisation. You're going to have to figure stuff out on the fly. Teams are going to try to save their best stuff for you that they throw at you defensively on that third down. The 49ers, it looks like they're still good on first down when they're throwing, although not as good as last year. But they're below average running on first down this year. That is a big, big deal. So anyway, your question is, do I think that running Debo is too predictable and the 49ers have lost the punch? I think in general, they've lost their first down punch. And I think that losing the first down punch has been bad for the rest of the offense. And I think one of the reasons they've lost the first down punch is, yes, the defenses are ready for what the 49ers are running on first down. So it all goes hand in hand. It's all tied together. It's all very intricate. And it's all ultimately reflected in graphics like this, where the 49ers are afraid to throw shorter passes because they think defenses are sniffing them out. The unpredictability of what the 49ers were running in years prior had led to a really good play calling score for Kyle Shanahan. And it does seem that they're not catching as many opponents by surprise this season. So thanks for the good question. That was really good. Thank you to the Vegas Viking. Purdy deserves to be paid without handicapping the building. 49ers need to build around him to keep him protected and give him the shot he needs to prevail. He was the last pick of the draft playing like a first rounder. I think everybody can agree that you want to find a way to efficiently get this done. Now, you can still pay the guy a lot of money and structure this to surf the wave of the salary cap. You could probably also find ways to cut some fat on the roster, but I'm not going to get into all those ways until we actually hit the offseason and we have full performance reviews and the ability to fully analyze everything that's going on with the 49ers. I mean, it's just, there's so much at this point that still remains to be seen to get from this point to the end point of the season before we start looking at the nitty-gritty of the numbers and the salaries. But I think in general, you have a really good point. You want to make sure that Brock Purdy is paid while also fortifying the rest of the team around him. Do I think $100 million over 3 years would be a good deal? No, I don't. That'd be $33 million a year. $33 million a year, that ranks probably like number 20 out of all quarterbacks. Guys, again, we've seen efficiency floors and ceilings for Brock Purdy. The demonstrated ceiling has been number one. Number one QBR, 2022, 2023. Well, 2023. 2022, I think he was like number four, number five. But 2023, it was number one in the league. That was where the QBR was. You can't argue with the data. This season, it's number seven. With an argument to be made that he's been playing better in many facets of the game this season. But leave that aside. It doesn't matter. We're getting too far into nitty-gritty. Keep it at the aerial view. The guy has not dropped below number seven efficiency during his time in the NFL. If he enters contract negotiations having not dropped under number seven efficiency, he's going to have to be paid as a top market guy. Now, what top of the market looks like is going to be up for another discussion, because there's different ways to pay quarterbacks at the top of the market. You could pay them the high APY if that's what they want. You could pay them a lot of fully guaranteed money if they'd rather have that. There's a chance that Purdy goes high on fully guaranteed money, lower on the APY, and it works out well for the 49ers cap situation because they prorate the signing bonus by NFL rule like an accordion. I don't know how they're going to do it. Nobody's exactly sure how they're going to do it, but all roads of rational thought lead to the same place, and that's that Brock Purdy has continued to play at a high level, and if this keeps up and if he could stay healthy, then why wouldn't the 49ers want to pay him, and why wouldn't they want to keep him? You know how hard it is to get a really good quarterback? There is no debate anymore. There is zero debate anymore regarding Brock Purdy amongst rational people who know what they're talking about. Asterisk, right? But there's zero debate amongst rational people who know what they're talking about whether or not Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. The haters and the people that have tried to dodge reality, they've all been proven wrong. Like, it's a right side of history and a wrong side of history kind of thing. Purdy's good. No question about it. Now we figure out how the 49ers are going to fit him into their structure beyond this season. But before then, we get to see how he performs over the next five games with, I mean, everybody wanted to see Purdy without all the weapons, without all the Avengers last year. Well, guess what? You have gotten to see him, and he ranks number seven in QBR. He ranked and even higher in right here, adjusted EPA. He's number five. He's just fine without those guys. There is no quarterback in the history of the league that can rank number one without good cohesion with his play caller and a good supporting cast of weapons. And we know that Joe Burrow has both of those. But unfortunately for the Bengals, there are other problems with that team. So it's not all about winning. The Bengals are 4-8, even though Burrow is playing at his Super Bowl level. But just keep it simple. The demonstrated ceiling for Purdy has been number one. The demonstrated floor has been number seven. That's QBR. If you want to do adjusted EPA per play, it's number one and number five. It's as simple as that. And the tail of the tape does not lie. Purdy's still young. He could only get better. That's another thing, too. In several interesting facets, he has gotten better this year. The scrambling has been better. I think that he's had to throw into tighter windows. The deep passing, especially on the move, that this year has been better. So it's a complicated thing because there's so many variables at the quarterback position. But I do think that there is a case to be made that he has put stuff on tape this year that we hadn't seen before that only strengthens the belief that Purdy can continue developing into a really, really elite player. And I think there are already many elite aspects of his game. And if you don't believe me, then ask Kurt Warner. I mean, Kurt Warner has actually played the position at an anticipatory style, right? With an anticipatory style at a very high level. And he says the same exact stuff. All right, any more questions? Let's go for them here. We're already running on 51 minutes. I've been talking for a while. So everybody go and check out the San Francisco Standard. Check out Public Rec, the good people of Public Rec. You could use the code that I put up on the screen. Standard article is up. We talk about the 49ers youth movement at the running back position. And we went through, should the 49ers pay Brock Purdy? Well, I think the answer is obviously pointing to yes. There's a lot of noise out there, but anytime you have to deal with the noise, look at the data. And the data paints a very, very clear picture. We'll talk to everybody soon.